Yeah, or science is, one can use it in the loose meaning of the term, deliberative understanding, judicial understanding, might be better to bring out the kinship with being sensible, as distinguished from possessing a science. Yes. Now, what would seem to have the highest rank of these kindred phenomena? We have the being sensible of the private man in his own affairs. We have the man who extends it beyond his self in the narrowest sense to his family. Then he is an oikonomikos, a manager of his household. And then if it's still larger, then he's a politikos, a man understanding the affairs of his city. And there are various stages there. For example, a man may be good enough as a juryman, may be very sensible with that, but not good enough in the assembly, the policy-making assembly. And a man may be good enough at that, but would not be able to elaborate a code, say, for a colony to be sent out to Sicily or elsewhere. Now, what would be the highest there in this diversity of forms which, since it's being sensible, can take? What would you say?
Legislator?
Would seem to be, yes. But let us see what follows.
Now, knowledge of one's own interest will certainly be one kind of prudence, though it is very different from the other kind, and people think that the man who knows and minds his own business is prudent, and that politicians are busybodies. Thus Euripides writes, "Would that be prudent when I might live a quiet life, a cipher in the crowd, sharing the common fortune, restless, aspiring, busy men of action?" For people seek their own good and suppose that it is right to do so. Hence, this belief has caused the word prudent to mean those who are wise in their own interest. Yet, probably.
Yeah, in other words, here I sort of make the tentative case for the view that the man concerned with his own good is more sensible than the others. So according to the popular view, that the politicians are busybodies. And i.e. they interfere with the affairs of other people. Yes, but how does the argument go on?
Yet probably, as a matter of fact, a man cannot pursue his own welfare without domestic economy and without political life.
Yes, so probably the Greek word is again that isos, literally translated perhaps, there one never knows what Aristotle means by it, whether he means whether it is he's truly dubitative or whether he's only urbane in order to avoid a dogmatic assertion. So we have to leave it in. Finally?
Moreover, even the proper conduct of one's own affairs is a difficult problem and requires consideration.
So in other words, it is not so simple then to draw the line between one's own affairs and the affairs of others. At least you must have friends. In this way, the narrow horizon must be transcended. Yes. Now, these were the main passages I thought we should read. There is a very important chapter later on at the end of the work, in 1143b18, roughly until the end of the book. But I don't believe that the time at our disposal is sufficient. Perhaps we have a kind of free discussion of the fundamental difficulty concerning practical wisdom. And the question, what is the status of the principles which we follow if we act sensibly? There is no such thing as a conscience in Aristotle. The word doesn't exist. A kind of innate faculty guiding us. It is something acquired through the proper kind of breeding, by the proper kind of breeding. But then, of course, we must have a standard which enables us to distinguish between the proper kind of breeding and the improper one. How do we get that? Aristotle gives an occasion, in the first book, when he gives his quasi-scientific definition of what happiness is, he says it consists in doing the work of man well. So what is implied there is this. There is man, there is a nature of man, an essence of man. And this nature points to its peculiar perfection, just as the acorn points to the oak and the kitten points to the cat. Only in the case of man, this is all much more complicated. In the human body, it is relatively simple, but regarding the human mind, it is quite complicated, but still, as we see, Aristotle would say, among there is such a thing as respectability or decency, recognized with variations everywhere, and even the disrespectable people recognize it, even if they say only, even if they refer to themselves as crooks, as the other side also does, only they don't find it wrong to be crooks, but they admit that they are not the squared ones. But there is then some awareness of these things, and this awareness Aristotle is trying to develop in this work. One can say there is a kind of unwritten law of proper conduct, and Aristotle articulates this in his Ethics. But still, this will not perhaps not be quite sufficient. Aristotle makes a distinction, and at which he leaves the matter, between happiness and moral virtue. All men want happiness, desire happiness. This is the clear starting point of the whole reflection of Aristotle. And somehow moral virtue seems to be a means for becoming happy. But that is not quite the way in which we are to look at. I think I read to you a passage which may help you when you think about these matters. I take it from Cicero's work on the ends of good and bad things, De Finibus, Book 3, paragraph or sections 20 to 25. Now, this is official Stoic teaching, Stoic schools. According to their teaching, we must begin from the principles of nature, from the beginnings which nature has laid in us, put in us. Man's first attraction is toward the things in accordance with nature. But as soon as he has attained to understanding and has discerned the order and, so to speak, the harmony that should govern conduct, he then esteems this harmony far more highly than all the things for which he originally felt an affection, and so on. We cannot read this now, you might read it at home. Something like self-preservation, the desire for self-preservation is the basis from which all life or moral life starts. But then, while we pursue our self-preservation, we become aware that for the sake of self-preservation, we must cultivate our minds, for example, and do other things. And then in a later stage, we become aware that what originally came in only as a means is higher in rank than that which it served. And this transformation of the means to an end, or something like that, is assumed also in Aristotle. The primary desire is desire for happiness, but this desire becomes practically identical with the desire for noble conduct. And what noble conduct is, we see by looking around and by observing ourselves and others, and especially people of refinement. And what this means is not too difficult to understand. Everyone, however crude and coarse, will come into situations from time to time where he will see what crudeness and coarseness is, and therefore by implication, also, and how unnice they are, and therefore by implication, what refinement is. So I must leave it at this remark. Well, this is now the last meeting of this course, and I wish you a nice summer and pleasant vacation.